Okay, let's, City Council will come to order. Sue, could you please call the roll?
Adams. Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Sussman.
Here.
Potter.
Okay, I think we'll read 1302 and 1303 together, and then we'll have the hearing.
1302, terminate transit-oriented development and multiple-unit housing limited tax exemptions. 1303, terminate existing and deny applications for limited tax exemption for single-family new construction and residential rehabilitation.
Okay, thank you. I think we're going to start with a staff presentation, but I first want to recognize Commissioner Fish, who's going to give some opening remarks about the hearing.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Today we're going to focus on technical issues related to limited term abatement ownership programs. There are several other issues pending relating to limited term abatements. First, there is the response to the issues raised by the auditor about program implementation and compliance. My office is working with PDC and the Bureau of Planning to prepare a comprehensive report responding to the audit, and for the benefit of my colleagues, I expect to have that for you in early October, and we'll circulate the report and conduct a briefing initially with the execs. Second, there are some short-term issues that still need to be resolved that we've discussed at Council, and that includes how to handle ad hoc requests for extensions of rental abatements. Rather than deal with these issues piecemeal, we've agreed to take them up in the context of the housing review process later this year, when we'll have data to look at both the costs and effectiveness of each of these programs in the context of any request for an extension. Third, there are a number of issues about the merits generally of long-term abatement programs, issues raised by my colleagues and by folks in the public. They include whether they are needed, what they cost us, the impact on other taxing jurisdictions, and whether there is a benefit, whether they should be expanded or adjusted to achieve a wider set of policy goals, and, of course, whether they can be administered in a more efficient and effective manner. As we've discussed previously, I'm going to ask the Council to hold off on these issues, which we'll be discussing in the context of the housing review. And again, we're working with the Bureau of Planning, PDC, and BHCD, so that we will be in a better position to make recommendations to the Council. In that context, we'll be providing you with a snapshot of housing needs, an overview of our current policy objectives in the housing arena, the tools we've been using to achieve them, some report card on the successes that we've had, and in broad brush strokes, recommendations about what adjustments we may want to consider as a body. I'll be asking for your input and on the general direction and on the appropriateness of tools like limited-term abatements. One of my goals is to make sure that the discussion about tools, though, does not get ahead of our policy discussions generally. So for today, I want to be clear, our focus will be on two very narrow issues. The first is, should the Council approve staff recommendations to terminate certain ownership abatements which do not appear to be in compliance with the conditions of the abatements? And second, should Council approve staff recommendations to deny certain abatements under the single-family new construction limited-term abatement program, where, again, the applicants do not appear to be qualified to receive the abatements? And we'll be receiving a presentation from staff and, in particular, Keith Witoski and Ann Johnson of PDC.
Thank you. Okay, Keith and Ann, why don't you come up and give us a staff presentation?
Keith Witoski, Government Relations, Portland Development Commission.
And I'm Ann Johnson with the Portland Development Commission's Neighborhood Housing Programs.
So as I give this, and then afterwards, Ann will be available to answer the technical questions because she's kind of the day-to-day expert that manages this program and knows it extremely well. We also have PDC attorney Margarita Molina and city attorney Jim Van Dyke available if you have any kind of statute or code-related questions. So I'm going to run through the PowerPoint. I'm not going to read every word on every slide. In some cases, I might not read any word on the slide, so feel free to stop me to the extent you want more detail. So as the commissioner said, you know, today the purpose is to take action on recommendations to terminate certain existing tax abatements and also to take action, and to the extent appeals are here, on denials for the tax abatement. And what this is, just so you know, the actions in terms of the terminations, should you agree with council recommendations, return about $90,000 in taxes, primarily to the city, the county, and school districts. That's kind of the value of the abatements. This whole hearing, essentially, and the actions and the work of Ann Johnson and Shelley Hack and the rest of the staff at PDC is kind of an outgrowth of the emerging partnership that we're having with Multnomah County in terms of the implementation and operation of this abatement program. So let's move on now. Essentially, the purpose of this program and the purpose of these programs is to be able to offer a 10-year abatement, so people are not paying property taxes for a period of 10 years on the value of the house. And the idea is to try and find ways to encourage investment within specific areas of the city. Those areas are selected by the Planning Commission, and I've got maps if you need them. They're distressed areas. So it's encouraging investment where people feel it might not otherwise occur, and it's to increase home ownership. And then kind of all the things that go along with pride of ownership in neighborhoods, in homes, and those kinds of things. So, and I think as we get into the policy discussion later this fall, you'll see a lot of the benefits that are derived from these and other programs. And again, this is only focused on single-family ownership, transit-oriented ownership units, and multifamily ownership units today. Important note here is that what's the decisions by staff, the recommendations by staff, are not an arbitrary process. We work within the guidelines that are driven by the State of Oregon statutes and Portland City Code. And I've got those listed on the next few slides, you know, this and a few others. And to the extent we need to refer back to these slides and to specific applicable statutes or codes, we can do so. But I think it's important that there are specific guidelines that have driven this work and driven these recommendations. So this first slide here is the ones that apply to the single family program on terminations and denials, the basis for it. This following slide here is the basis for why a transit-oriented abatement or a new multifamily abatement was either terminated or application being denied. So real quickly, I want to talk about that. Those recent work and conversations done, and Commissioner Fish referred to monitoring compliance. And this is a product of staff kind of being a watchdog of taxpayer dollars. And as Commissioner Leonard has mentioned many times, you know, these abatements are essentially, they're a line item in the budget. If you don't have these abatements, that $90,000, the city share of it, could be spent elsewhere. So I think staff has done a very good job of being a watchdog, of watching out for city investments. And some of the things they've done is they've looked at the initial screening of taking these applications or taking the existing abatements and saying, well, what's the property address? How does that compare to the address on the property tax bill? Looking at deed holder income, looking at driver's license or other applicable identification. And some of the tools that, like Commissioner Leonard mentioned during the development of our budget last spring, such as an affidavit, are being developed, and we expect something like that or very similar to that to be implemented within the next year. So let's get to the results of the staff's watchdog efforts and the compliance efforts. They looked at over nearly 700 properties within the portfolio that apply to these programs. 97 were identified for possible termination among the single family. In the end, 37 have not provided the documentation. And so they're recommending a termination of those. In terms of the multi-unit and the transit-oriented units, there were 10 that did not provide adequate documentation. And so those also are being recommended for denial. And then what you also have today is 28 initial applications that didn't meet, you know, the standards and the guidelines and the criteria, and therefore they were denied a tax abatement. So there's not a termination occurring. Somebody, you know, bought a house, wanted to get the abatement, but they didn't meet some specific criteria that, again, we've identified within the slides. And as I mentioned earlier, the collective financial impact is about $90,000. That obviously doesn't have anything to do with the denials, because the denials never abated taxes in the first place. It's just the terminations. So we also wanted to just give you a flavor for when they did the review, what they found. And again, this is the breakdown of the applications that were denied, why they were denied. Pause for a second so you can look at the slide. You know, 28 in total. Following slide is the basis for the terminating of existing abatements for the single-family homes. Again, there's 37 that are being recommended for termination, and here are the reasons why. And it's things like being over the allowable sales price of $275,000, or maybe someone's making more than the income limit of $67,500. There's another one, you'll probably hear about it today as well, which is in order to get the abatement, you've got to apply and get it before the final permit is issued. And that's something that we had long and productive conversations with Multnomah County on over the course of 2007. And, you know, that's one of the requirements as well, kind of in statute and in code. And then the final one is the multifamily transit-oriented units. Again, 10 are being recommended for termination for the reasons you see here. So that is the broad overview and the extent of the PowerPoint that we had today. So what you'll be having is a series of people that have signed up that have the right to appeal, and then we can get into conversations after you've heard all those about specific cases, and you can call staff up to the extent you need to as well.
Great. Questions? I guess I have one. What is the timeline over which a decision was made that documentation was not provided by the apparent owner or whatever the circumstance? What's the timeline that played out over?
Okay, on terminations, sometimes we find out during the year that somebody has sold the unit, in which case we try to get out to those as soon as we can to say, you know, most of the single-family new construction ones actually have a subsequent homebuyer notice, which says on the title, this has a tax abatement, but you, in order to continue that, must apply for it and be eligible income-wise. So we try to get those out during the year, but we do get a list as of July 1, because that's the date that ownership matters to Multnomah County. So on July 1, about the middle of July, right between the 15th and the 20th, we got that final list that said these have either turned over and are no longer occupied by who owned them this time last year, or the mailing address does not match the site address, which implies that the tax bill is going to some other place. Now, many of those were post office boxes. We went ahead still because there's no way of knowing when someone gets their mail at a post office box where they're living. So if they got this notice and said, you know, but I still live here, then we wanted a copy of their driver's license to show that that is there, because you do have to have a site address on your driver's license. You can't have just a post office box on your driver's license. And then we also asked for tax returns for 2007 to show that the property wasn't rented. So in order to try to make sure that people were truly telling us whether they occupied that property, there were a few occasions where people couldn't provide those two things for some reason. They provided other stuff to show that this was their primary address, this is where they are living, and all of those people have been taken off the termination list. It's the people who either didn't respond or the information that they gave us did not meet that criteria to prove that they were owner-occupied. If it was a turnover, if it was a rollover to a new buyer, then they have to qualify income-wise. They don't have to qualify on the house price anymore, but they do still have to be under whatever the current income is, which is the $67,500 for current. That's up to a family of four. If you have a family of five or more, then it goes up to whatever 100% of median family income is, depending on your household size.
So people, in essence, this process starts in July. People, if they know there's problems, they're going to know by July or August?
Yes.
At least initial notification.
By early August, we did find a couple of minor anomalies where the turnover was, we had one that sold on the 28th of June. We didn't actually send those out until close to the middle of August. But I can tell you that brand new homeowner had her stuff in the next day. She was on the phone saying, what do I have to do? What do I do? You know, so people generally are very responsive to these letters. If, you know, occasionally we get people who don't open them. So we did send the initial ones to the address and then to any mailing address. And then if we did not get a response from the first round, then we sent them registered to both the site address and the mailing address if those were different. So people got registered letters. We had people who didn't pick those up. So generally, most of them were picked up. It kind of was a telltale sign to us if they picked them up in Texas that they weren't living in the unit at this time. So many of those are the people that we didn't hear from, and those are the ones that are on the termination list for not being owner-occupied.
Okay.
Probably the biggest question may come with the denials and whether or not the builder needed to apply before the home was finished. It is very ambiguous in both the code and in city, in the statute, state statute and city code. It always refers to single-family new construction. The county thinks that it really should be applied for before the builder even begins construction. So with some negotiations with Multnomah County, we said, well, we think that the builder needs, sometimes they don't know exactly how big a house they're building or how expensive it's going to be when they first start. And there is a house price limit plus the income limit that does limit the house that would be eligible for this. So we said that builders needed to apply before the house was completed. So that is what we have been doing since January the 1st. That's been on our website since that point. It's been out. We tried to get out to builders last year to let them know that this was changing. But sometimes it is hard for us to know exactly who's building homes and whether or not they were in the limited tax abatement areas.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, let's move to testimony. So, Sue, I presume people have signed up on one resolution or the other. Is that, or just
right?
Signed
these
up?
Are all on 1303.
The they're all on 1303. Okay.
Right. Or a second, single family new construction.
Single family new construction.
Right.
Great. So, why don't you call the people who are signed up to testify? If you are a couple, you can come up together, and that would be fun.
The first name is Sarah Yee.
Welcome.
Hi.
So if you could each give your name for the record, and you'll each have 3 minutes to testify.
My name is Sarah Yee. I want he to help me to
Yes. Could you pull the microphones close? Yeah.
All right. My name is Samson. And do I start?
So are you going to?
I'm going to
translate?
Translate for her, yeah.
Okay. Great. Why don't you?
I wonder if before you start, I'd like to follow along. Is it the property on Southeast 80th?
Yeah.
3636?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So it's on the next to the last page.
Oh, thanks.
It's actually under the name Nathan Yee.
Oh,
Nathan?
My husband.
Nathan Yee. Okay. Applied after final permit was issued. Okay.
Randy, what number is that?
Yeah,
it's 4284-08. Next to the last page on the handout behind the resolution.
Good. Exhibit A.
Yes.
All the way toward the end.
Okay.
Nathan Yee.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me just get on the same page here and then we'll. Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Now that we have your address, okay, please go ahead and you have a. 3 minutes. Okay. We'll give you each 3 minutes if you wish.
She's going to say it to me, then I'll just.
Okay.
So she was wondering, she's applied for the tax exemption and why they didn't qualify or whatever.
Well, it looks like here it was applied. Does any of the staff have particulars here? Because you could help us through this, I think. It says on our. On Exhibit A that she applied after the final permit was issued. Do you have more information?
Ann Johnson with PDC. And they, I believe, had this home built, and or some of their friends were familiar with the limited tax abatement program. They didn't realize that they needed to apply while it was under construction.
So, but for that, would they have qualified?
But for that, they would have qualified, yes.
And so I guess I'm wondering what the policy reason is. Why do we care whether the home's under construction or not if they qualify?
Well, this goes back to our discussions with Multnomah County. Okay. In state statute, it talks about proposed construction being approved for the abatements and the fact that it does need to be, you know, new construction in the city statutes. So this is the question that Multnomah County raised last year, where they wanted all of them approved before construction began. And our agreement with Multnomah County was that we thought they needed to be approved while they were still as proposed construction, at least under construction. And that therefore, because the state statute's main focus is to incent development in distressed areas, that if the tax abatement was not applied for before it was completed, that that was not an incentive to development.
So they had an occupancy permit, and after that, they applied for the abatement.
Right. There was the final building permit, was all signed off, and okay. Then they applied.
So did you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you...
Because she said she never knew the rule change. No one told her or anything.
So I guess the question would be, why wouldn't she have applied early on if she thought she needed it to build the house? And the second question would be that apparently she didn't need, it would appear she didn't need the credit to construct the house because it was done before she applied.
She applied right after the house was finished. She never knew it was supposed to be before because it was always after, I believe. I
mean, you heard the explanation from
yeah.
the staff. Okay. Did you explain that?
She said she never received any letters or things regarding the change of the rules.
But why would she, if she hadn't applied, why would she receive a letter? How would they know she existed?
She said she waited for the inspection letters for the final permit, everything, before she could actually apply for the.
And I understand that, but that's the problem, that the law requires that you apply for it before that. So how would she have been notified if she had made no application?
Because they said they sent the notice to the builder, but the builder never even applied for us. So,
your mom did send a notice to the builder?
No, I thought PDC told all builders that the rule changed, that you had to apply before December 31st.
Does that have any?
Last year, we did send ones to as many builders as we could find who had open permits in the home buyer opportunity areas. But there are, I can't guarantee that was absolutely 100% to every single possible builder, depending on when they pulled their permits exactly.
So at some point, we had been allowing credits, abatements after construction was complete, but the county said that's not what the statute allows for. We're not going to agree to that anymore, and so we tightened up our rules.
Yes.
Okay.
That was last year.
That was last year, and we got a grace period from the county through the end of December of last year, and then January 1st, any applications we received after January 1st, the builder or the homeowner had to apply before the final permit was issued.
Do you have anything more you'd like to add?
So how can she reapply or something so she can get accepted, or is there any other way? Because she meets everything, but she didn't know this.
I don't know if we can give you that answer. I think maybe staff can, but we also can't give legal advice, according to my legal advisor to my left.
Well, if I may, the... The challenge we have is that there's been a staff recommendation that you did not comply with a legal requirement. You've been invited to come in and give us any testimony that you want, which we will consider. We're going to hear all the appeals, and then we'll have a discussion and consider it. But it would not be appropriate for us to give you advice, legal advice, as to how to deal with this issue. But we would encourage you, if this appeal is not acted on in a way that you deem appropriate, to talk to PDC or planning or an attorney to see what your options are.
So she said, who does she look for at PDC? Is it Ann Johnson or Bao?
I think, if you want to discuss this while we hear from other people with Ann, go ahead. But I think what Commissioner Fish is saying, it's a legal issue and a deadline has been missed. So I think we understand that.
That's all.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll make a decision after we hear from everybody. So
okay.
A few more minutes. And who's signed up next?
The next is Bradley Gillies.
This appears as 4309-08 on the same page.
Okay. Welcome. If you could give us your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Bradley Gillies, and I thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My prepared remarks are a little more, about 5 minutes, so I'll try to abbreviate them. I'm here today to explain why my application for limited tax exemption or abatement should not be declined. As a little bit of background, I'm a first-time homeowner, and I live in a newly constructed house at 8250 Northeast Multnomah Street at Portland 97220. I purchased the house from Kimco Properties on March 14, 2008. The property was listed by Kimco's real estate agent, Norman Wheeler of REMAX Equity Group. The real estate listing for the property advertised that this tax abatement was available on this property. I went to PDC's website before purchasing the home and verified the existence of the single-family new construction tax abatement program. I also verified that the property was in a homeowner opportunity area and that I met all the requirements of the program. I submitted my application on May 11th, 2008, within 90 days of the purchase of the property as required. On or around August 21st, 2008, I was notified that the PDC had declined my application. Through a telephone conversation with Ann Johnson of the PDC, I learned that my application was declined because the builder did not apply for eligibility before construction was complete, which is now required by rule changes effective January 1st, 2008. My application for exemption should not be declined for the following four reasons. First, I meet all the requirements of the program, and I submitted a complete application and fee within 90 days of purchase of the property. By doing so, I've done everything that is required of me and everything that is within my power to do in order to secure the tax abatement that I was led to believe was available. As a matter of fairness, I should not suffer financial injury due to mistakes or inaction by another party. Second, construction on my house began on or before August 16, 2007, before the changes in rules on January 1st, 2008, which now require the builder to submit an application prior to completion of construction. The final building inspection was completed for this house, and the OK to occupy permit was issued February 7, 2008, which I might add is before I had even seen the property. I've been informed by, through Mr. Wheeler that Kimco believed that the tax abatement was available as advertised and that they did not know of the January 1st rule changes. Thirdly, denying my application is a violation of the public trust, in my opinion. The limited tax abatement program encourages new housing construction in distressed neighborhoods by offering tax abatement incentive. The builder of my house advertised the availability of the tax abatement as an incentive to buyers. I bought the house trusting that I would receive the tax abatement so long as I met the requirements of the program. Now, my monthly mortgage payment is based on the assumption of tax abatement that I trusted was available. Denying my application now amounts to a bait and switch. The PDC baited the builder and me with the promise of tax abatement. Then once the house was built, I bought the house by entering into a 30-year mortgage, and now the PDC says I cannot have the tax abatement. This is a violation of public trust, in my opinion. And fourth and finally, denying my application is contrary to the mission of the PDC and the Portland vision. The PDC's mission is to bring together resources to achieve Portland's vision of a diverse, sustainable community with healthy neighborhoods, a vibrant central city, a strong regional economy, and quality jobs and housing for all. Denying my application for tax abatement may jeopardize my ability to make my mortgage payments, thereby increasing the risk of foreclosure. New homes in foreclosure and the financial ruin that such foreclosures may bring to the former owners do not achieve the goals of a healthy neighborhoods, a strong economy, and housing for all. So in summary, my application for limited tax abatement should not be declined because, one, I've met all the requirements of the program. Two, the construction of my house began before the rule changes of January 1st, 2008. Denying my application is a violation of public trust, in my opinion. And also, denying my application is contrary to the mission of the PDC and the Portland Vision. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thank you. Questions?
I have a couple of questions. If Ann, could you join us for a moment? Is it Gillies?
Gillies, yes.
But it's spelled I-S.
I-E-S.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Just one quick question. So the occupancy permit for your home was issued?
February 7th, 2008.
And the builder had not applied before the occupancy permit. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
And do we have any knowledge as to whether the builder engaged any due diligence with PDC prior to the completion of this project to determine whether or not it was eligible for a tax abatement?
This property was built by Kimco. Kimco did apply for other properties for the tax abatement, but not for this one.
Okay.
We did send.
Could you speak closer to the microphone?
Oh, sorry. Yes. I apologize. We did send information out to this builder about the limited tax abatement and the fact that they needed to apply before final permit or before December 31st if it was already completed, and they did not do that for this property.
That was my second question. Thank you. Mr. Gillies, I, in my former life, was a lawyer. I took an oath when I took this job that I could not practice law. My license is suspended, so I'm not allowed to give legal advice. But I will tell you that what you have described to us is a scenario where you believe that you acted in good faith on what some other person told you. And in acting in good faith, you then changed your behavior. That is the kind of situation that frequently compels people to get legal advice. Because if you believe that you've been harmed because you have relied on someone else's representation, then you may, in fact, have a claim. You may or may not, but you may have a claim against that person, just as if any of the warranties that were made in connection with the sale turn out not to be true. If you were told that this was a habitable house, that it met certain environmental standards, that it had a smoke detector, whatever warranties were made, you may have a claim for either breach of contract or for fraud. And I just want to say that what you've described to us is something that we are obviously aware of the hardship, and we are not in any way dismissive of what it means to you personally. But I would encourage you, as among your options, to consider whether the fact that you bought a house that was represented to you as being abatement eligible may give you some recourse, not in this proceeding, but in some other legal proceeding.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Gillies. And we'll hear from the next person signed up to testify.
Next are Kenneth and Diane Campen.
This would be 3772.07, which is two pages earlier, bottom of the page.
Diane Campen.
Yes. Of W. Campen.
You each have 3 minutes, so please feel free to start.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for taking this time to consider our appeal.
Our application for this program was denied by a letter dated November 23rd, 2007, because we were determined to exceed the annual gross income for our area. At that time, the median gross income for a family of four was $66,900. I do not have the figure available for what it was for a family of two, such as my wife and myself. My concern applies to the meaning of annual gross income. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines annual as occurring or happening every year or once a year. The repetitive nature of the occurrence is essential to the nature of the term annual. In my original application, I included a copy of the most recent pay stub, which was available at that time. I do have that available, and explained that the categories of pay detailed therein. As I do not have that document at hand, well, actually, I did find that since I have for your consideration a copy of the most recent pay stub available and the final pay stub for the year 2007. In the third column from the left, you will find the annual pay rate at which I am paid, which, due to contractual increases since the time of the original application, is now $51,252. In the sixth and seventh column from the left, you will see the numbers of hours worked over overtime worked in each category. W refers to the base hours worked. W refers to overtime hours. N details nine differential, and L documents leave hours. I believe Ms. Johnson has copies of this on hand. I also have copies for your consideration. You can see that this one document shows that overtime hours vary considerably. In fact, in the year we are considering, fiscal year 2007, 42% of my income was in overtime hours. In the original application, I also detailed V time, which applies to hours in excess of 56 hours per week or 6 days per week. During the previous year, because our stations were undermanned and because the utility carrier, that is the carrier who is supposed to carry my route on my days off, was assigned to another station as a part-time supervisor, I was expected to carry my route regularly on my scheduled days off. This led to considerable V time, which is paid at double the base hourly rate. You do not see this on the most recent pay stub, as management does everything in its power to prevent having to pay such wages, and it's called on the carpet by higher management if such a situation occurs. As the post office has experienced extreme financial losses due to increased fuel costs and decreasing revenue due to the competition of email, online, and telephone payment options, et cetera, it is unlikely that such pay levels will ever return to postal employees. I have presented for your application also an article entitled Reality Check from the USPS Western Area Update. In it, Sylvester Black, the Western Area Vice President, refers to our shrinking workload. He notes that, quote, in the Western area, we've delivered 1.1 billion fewer pieces, canceled nearly a billion fewer pieces, and handled 2.2 billion pieces fewer in pieces of mail in our plants than we did by this time last year. In the third quarter, the Postal Service lost $1.1 billion, unquote. Local management is doing everything within its power to reduce hours and thus wages. I also have for your consideration a copy of a work hour workload report by carrier, which details the expectations of management for my route. Under the column entitled Total Time and subtitled Projected Total, you can see that it is expected that my hours should not regularly exceed 8 hours, and management requests that we take time from our vacation time to leave early when hours do not total that. You will also see that station manager Jim Stewart commented that we'll work on the street time soon because work had gone into overtime. In summary, it is evident that annual income may not be applied at the height that it was experienced in 2000 when we applied for this program. It will more closely approximate the contractual hourly base wage. It should also be noted that my wife receives a monthly check for Social Security in the amount of $713, thus adding $5,704 dollars to our combined annual income, so that our annual income, which is to say repeatable income, as qualifying for this program, is less than $60,000. And so I do feel we qualify for the tax abatement. thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Ms. Campen?
The only thing I have to say is I was working for a company. I have worked all my life. And in the year that he has documented, I was working. The $713 a month that he just referred to is Social Security. I've become a severe diabetic. I'm insulin dependent. I have neuropathy in my feet. And I'm unable to continue working. Thus, my income is very little, $713 a month. And so thus, the income goes down considerably, not only his overtime, but my income. And so I would beseech you to take that into consideration. We're 62 and 60, and this will be our final home. And if we can't do the tax abatement, which we bought almost on the condition, we were told tax abatement, tax abatement, tax abatement. And they even figured up how much the payment would be without it. And then we went through quite a bit because the tax abatement for that particular development went away, and then it came back. And so we applied right away anyhow, so we were still on the back burner, whether we are accepted or not accepted. But far as it stands, as of January of this year, 08, our income has dramatically dropped.
Thank you. So, Mr. Campen, as I understand, you're saying that the original income level at which you qualified has been exceeded due to extensive overtime and V-time, which is not your sort of projected or baseline.
What I'm saying is that was a very unusual year because of the taking away of my substitute. I was required to work 6 days a week mm-hmm. and into excessive hours to fill in for people who we did not have.
Since
we were
January,
also
that hasn't happened.
In the original application, which I submitted to Ms. Johnson, I also had documented that we were in a year at the post office when we do not have a contract, and as a result, the post office was not filling vacancies. They were just requiring additional overtime until in January, then they hired a whole lot of people because they had completed that contract. As a result, we live now at the base salary, or close to the base salary, that is the repeatable actual income.
Repeatable. Yeah.
I have a Mr. Kamen, I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
How many years have you received the abatement?
We have not.
You have not. I thought
we were denied in the original application.
We were denied.
Okay. Why you referred to the year 2000?
I'm sorry. Maybe I misspoke.
When did you first apply?
We applied in 2007.
My mistake.
And we purchased in 2007.
Okay. And so you were denied because at the initial point you didn't meet the income.
That's
you were
correct.
Above the ceiling.
At the time we applied, we expected that we were meeting that income.
I see.
And then the overtime just continued to pile on and pile on.
I'm sorry.
$22,000 in overtime in 1 year.
And what are your property taxes?
I do not have the exact documentation on that, sir, with me.
Okay. And but for the compulsory overtime, you would, in your judgment, fallen within the income guidelines?
I believe so, sir. I would have been making approximately $52,000 a year.
And could you come up for a sec? I just have a question about this code, if I could.
Could you maybe slide down a little so Ann can get close to the microphone?
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Thanks.
I promise not to bite.
These these rules sometimes seem cold and inflexible, but I hope you understand that our job is to make sure we understand what the law requires and
certainly
where our latitude is.
30 years ago, I was a legal clerk in the Army. I know.
You got an honest job working for the post office. My question is, if in any year of the program someone exceeds the income ceiling, are they disqualified for the entire program, or are they eligible? Is it just knock them out for the year, and the following year they may be reinstated?
The program states that we verify income at the time of application. We do not re-verify income once you have qualified at the time that you apply.
So help me with that. So if you met the income requirement when you applied, but you later your income went up, we would not automatically disqualify you?
No.
Okay. And are there any provisions in the law that give us discretion on the question of income limits?
That I don't think I could speak to legally. There's an income cap. And basically what it says is the income, the law states the income cap.
Yeah. The income cap is part of city code, not part of state law. The income cap refers to the annual gross household income at the time of the application.
I see.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Next person, Sue?
The next one is Kifan.
What's the last name?
P-H-A-N.
P-H-A-N.
Oh. It's on the same page, I think.
Right same
above,
page
right
as?
Right above 42-8408. Right above Nathan Yee. This Northeast 93rd.
My name is Kifan. I'm a bit in it, not very well, but because then I need my daughter for help.
Okay. Hello, my name is Tao Fan, and I'm his daughter. And we are here today to explain our situation with a tax exemption. We bought a new house, and the lease agent told us that we got a tax exemption, but later when we found out, we got the letter from the PDC said that we not really qualified for that because the seller did not apply for the tax exemption, and it turned out that we don't know anything, and it turned out that we right now we have been trouble with the financial because we didn't know that we didn't got the tax abatement. Seeing our area is a tax abatement area, and just because the owner, the buyer did, the seller didn't apply for that, and we didn't get the tax abatement, and right now the financial is messed up. And we really don't know anything right now, and we need the help of you.
So you bought a new home?
Yes.
And did you hear the earlier discussion with almost exactly the same circumstances?
Yes.
That the law requires that the abatement be applied before the final permit is issued before you occupy.
Yes. Before we bought the new house, We asked the seller many times that does the house qualify for the tax abatement, and they said yes. And after we bought that, they said that they didn't know that the rule changed.
They didn't know the rule change. Mean that they did not apply.
Yes.
For the abatement.
Yes.
But they represented to you that you would be eligible for the abatement.
Yes.
Again, let me just offer that if a seller, say, represented to you what the property line was, and it turned out that the property line included parts of the neighbor's property,
mm-hmm.
you would have recourse against the seller for misrepresenting title to you. And again, we can't give you legal advice, but you may want to confer with a lawyer on the question of whether the seller told you something which they were not legally permitted to advise you of. And if your family relied on what a seller told you, there may or may not be a legal consequence to that, but I would strongly encourage you to consult with a lawyer on that.
So we have to deal with a seller?
Well, I'm suggesting that you may want to get legal advice to see if you have any claim against the seller.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Gordon Williams.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If you could...
Gordon Patrick Williams.
Okay, and which address is...
6968 North Columbia Way.
Oh, okay. Same page. Okay, great. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, I really felt through the cracks. Even when I bought the house, I was qualified for the abatement, but my real estate agent never told me about it. I bought it new, direct from the builder, and he never applied for it, and I was never aware of it until very recently that I was even qualified for an abatement. So I would have followed through with it. I would have made sure it happened, but nobody told me. And I was married at the time when I bought the house. My mother was going to come up and move with me and my son. I got divorced. My mother had a stroke. She's in a nursing home. And my son is doing his thing. So I'm in a real financial bind with the taxes by myself because it's putting me in a real bind. It's a struggle to come up with the tax money every year. But the main thing is I don't feel it was my fault at all, because the people who I bought the house from, the agent and the builder, dropped the ball. They never made me aware of it, and I had no idea that it was even available to me. And now I really need it. And that's about all I have to say. Short and sweet.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the notes here. Did you purchase your house in 2005?
Yeah. And I talked to Sue, that I fall within the qualifications of the terms of the abatement as far as income goes and the price of the house. And
mm-hmm. When did you apply?
I applied, I think, earlier this year.
After 12/31/07.
Yeah, after the deadline, of course. But I think I can't pull a date out of my head, but about 6 months ago I applied.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Du Han Nguyen. That's 4227 Southeast 79th.
Hi.
Just give us one minute here. Southeast 79th?
Right.
Yeah.
3494 on page
4247 or 4227?
Yeah.
4227.
Oh, 4247.
4247.
Yes.
4247.
I'll make the change.
Yeah.
No. Okay. All right. Did everybody find it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just here to translate for her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. By the way, what's your name again?
Me. Tao Fan. T-H-A-O, Tao.
And
her name?
No, just you. You live in Portland?
Yes.
Are you going to school somewhere?
No, because I'm in college right now.
Where are you going to college?
Yeah. BCC.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for helping us on this.
Thanks for
helping. We appreciate your service translating.
Go ahead.
My name's Yu Han Wei.
Go by.
Giống như nhà mình lần năm trước đó, mình mua cái nhà năm trước mà năm trước đó mình mua mình ở nhưng mà không có ở rồi mình để mình cho đi mướn, mình cho mướn năm đó mình cho mướn xong rồi bây giờ cái giấy trong đó có chương trình là nói cái khu cái vùng đó là giảm thuế đất, mình đã làm giấy thuế đất rồi nhưng mà họ bây giờ họ gửi giấy và họ đòi hỏi mình những cái giấy tờ gì đó rồi mình đem xuống cho bữa trên cái chỗ BDC á, rồi họ nói là như mình cho mướn là không có được giảm thuế đất thì gửi hàng xuống đây, gửi mình xuống đây.
Actually her situation is like she bought a house last year and she rent that house for another person and she didn't live in that and right now she doesn't want to rent for anyone and she want to live in that house and she said that before she bought that the house is in the tax abatement and right now she want to apply for that again and the PDC said that when she rent the house for somebody else the house is not qualified for the tax abatement but right now she want to live in that so she want to reapply for that and they said she needs to tell to here to be here and tell that to you. Yes.
Anne, I'm sorry, could we call you up again? Did you have a chance to hear that narrative?
Yes, and I have heard this. As I said earlier, if the property address does not match the site address, that's when we ask people to provide documentation that they have been living and are living in the property. So when they brought in their documentation, they could not give us their tax return showed that it was rented because it had been rented, and they didn't have identification that showed that this was their primary residence.
And if she chooses to make it her primary residence going forward?
Unfortunately, once you take the tax abatement off, once it's been rented, then it no longer meets the criteria and you can't put it back on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then our last speaker is Susan Mortimer.
Which property address are you?
4138 North Montana.
Give us a second to find it.
So that's 375607.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come and appeal.
Could you just give us your name first?
Susan Mortimer.
Okay.
The reason my application was denied was because I was not the original owner on the deed. When the property was purchased in February of 2007, I was in the final stages of divorce. And my now ex-husband and I had sold our home, and we were awaiting the distribution of the proceeds from that sale. And I wanted to find a place to live for myself and my children before the closing of that sale. So the property was purchased by my mother, and we had an agreement that once I received the funds from my home sale, that I would reimburse her the down payment and closing costs and all subsequent mortgage payments, HOA payments, and tax payments would be made by me, which they have been. And within a month, I reimbursed her the funds and the deed was changed to reflect both of our names. Her name was kept on the deed because she is named in my will as the executor of my estate for the benefit of my children. And that's why her name for just to make it easy in case of, you know, my untimely death. It would just make it easier for her to manage the estate.
Ms. Mortimer, I have two questions. Mm-hmm. Is your mother listed on the deed as a tenant in common or as a joint tenant? Or are you on the deed now?
I am on the deed now, yes.
But you and your mother?
Correct. And she has never lived there. She signed an affidavit stating that she has never resided there, has no intention of residing there.
But both names appear on the deed so that if you predecease your mother, she would be able to take title.
Correct.
And when you acquired this house, when you asked your mother to acquire the house on your behalf, did you understand your mother was acting as your agent?
Yes, I did. Yes, I had no, at that time, I had been a stay-at-home mother for 5 years, so I had no, and I was awaiting the funds from closing, so I had no ready funds or no credit to make a purchase on my own.
Did your mother ever reside in this house?
No, she did not.
And